So, welcome to the No Shame Podcast. So, still rolling solo. Robin, the producer. Man, we miss you. We really miss you. At the moment, I'm doing. I'm out there figuring out how to do sound, how to do video, how to do some editing as well. But I think everybody's upskilling, aren't they? We're in this whole situation, still locked down in our houses. And talking about being locked down in our houses. I've been getting a few messages this week. I think I've mentioned it already. About people telling people, like, get into your house, stay in your house. It's easy to sit on your ass. Mostly, a lot of the stuff comes from the podcast. If I get 5 or 6 messages, kind of like the same topic, I say, like, well, there must be a lot of people feeling like that, more than one in any way. But a lot of people, like, are struggling about how the reset is going to happen after this. So what do we do when it's all over, you know? Do we just go straight back to life? People are still carrying the fears. They're worried about going out, worried about being in groups of people, worried about how to open your business again. All of these things that I think we need to get some advice on, especially small businesses. I've mentioned the small businesses again, but I've done a little bit of research this week and I've been looking around and I just don't know how some of the barbers and the salons and all of these things are going to be able to go after. We're going to be able to go on after this. And I don't mean as in like because of the social distancing or because of the virus, but because of the financial burden that this is going to be on a lot of buildings. I don't think on a lot of businesses. I don't think people realize that a lot of businesses still have to pay 100% of their rent and of their utilities and stuff. And I don't blame the landlords either. So some people I can see out there going, oh, the landlord's greedy or he's this. And I don't think that's fair to say as well, because I think the system goes up. So you owe the landlord money. The landlord owes him money. He owes the bank money. So I think that the real aspect of it all is the bank. A lot of the money out there is a lot of low interest loans out there now as well. So don't think the banks are doing enough for the small companies, but hopefully over the next little few weeks that we get the kind of we get an insight on what the plan is, because I don't know about you, but I have a pain in my neck being fed these little snippets of points at them. And every time you say something to somebody, they rear up and attack. I've seen people asking questions on Facebook, just normal questions. I think people have been saying, stay connected. Make sure that you talk to people. Stay away, but stay together, all of this stuff. And then somebody posts somebody up on Facebook and they're slaughtered. And the thing about this is that as it goes on, people are going to be afraid to post stuff. Now, listen, I'm 100% with everybody about fake news and all of this. I'll be the first to admit, we're all human. People expect you to be this infinite or you know all. That's not the case with anybody in any situation. My own self, I was guilty this week. I was even last week, and I posted a picture up, and it turned out that the picture was from a while ago. Now it was a bit, I don't know. It was suspect how this picture pops up. I don't think people get out of bed in the morning and say, I know what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna post a picture, and people are gonna think it's this, and then this is gonna take over the headline. It was obviously to do with the Keelings thing. In my defense, this is the sad part of it. This one picture was a part of a line of pictures defending these people. And when I say defending them, saying that these people are just like me and you. These people are workers, and they're trying to keep going rather than understanding what the people, they're attacking the people. I won't say attacking the people, but questioning the people that are making the decisions. Now, my problem wasn't with people coming into the country to work. I'm a fan of this. I've said it many times on the podcast. No matter what other people say, it doesn't really matter what they say anymore, because I think the media has its own brain now and its own narrative, and it's going to run with that as well. But my problem with it was what happens if somebody on the Ryanair flight had COVID-19 and they had passed it on to a group of people, which is 180-odd people, and then I heard there was other planes coming in after it. What kind of situation are we in then, especially when everyone has to go and isolate, and then everyone, is there an idea, can everybody contract the virus then, and then we have 180 people sick in the country, and I just don't know, but I have the questions like anybody else has the questions. I'm not going to try and say that I come at you this way, where, like, I know all, and I think other people don't either, and I think that's what the listeners of the podcast actually appreciate. So, just to the people out there, if somebody's asking questions or trying to kind of, I don't know, calm this situation, whatever which way they can, don't attack them, because you're only going to get a response, which is going to be a defense to an attack, or you're going to end up getting a situation where the person doesn't want to say that anymore. And then And then they're kind of locked in their house and they're afraid to talk. They're even more afraid now. So if people are constantly doing it, obviously they're we have a word for them and it's called trolling you. So be careful of them as well. I have my hat on during this podcast because if we take my hat off, I'm pretty sure my hair will just fill this whole room. The most sought after thing after this is going to be barbers. So if we can get some boiler suits or something like that and get some barbers into some boiler suits and do some, I don't know, community haircuts or something like that, it's needed. Now, even saying that, that line there is like, Paddy Houlihan said everybody should go out and get haircuts now. I've seen a lot of this attacking on our people. Another great point I think I made on the podcast was, is the coronavirus the virus or is humanity the virus now? You know, where we see the it's not big, but we're starting to see the planet come back. The other day, I was walking up the road, and I was pretty shocked to see three ducks swimming in the Jobstown River. Now, if you know the Jobstown River, it's not a place for ducks. It's not even a place for bleeding. It's not even a place for water sometimes. A lot of people dumping, unfortunately. I've seen a lot of dumping going on as well in this whole situation. It's another thing as well. I don't understand with people. How could you put a bag of rubbish down on the ground and say to yourself, someone else is going to pick that up, or that's their job. So, just a few things that have been bouncing around in my head. To take your attention off the COVID for a little while, I got my first guest on here, John Connors. I think John is an incredible man. John speaks his mind, and he gets an awful lot of backlash for it. But if you're going to stand up, be prepared for people to try and shoot you down. To me, John Connors is an activist for his own community. I've seen him do videos aimed at his own community, and I remember reading through comments one time, and I was horrified of some of the stuff that was being said to him. But to me, he's somebody that should be cherished, because not everyone's going to speak up and stand their mind. Most people are blending in, and if you try to stand up and speak your mind these days, you won't just get attacked straight on. You will be attacked from the left, the right, your own people. You will be attacked by the media, by all of this. It's brave to be able to stand there and hold your ground and stand by your words. Some people are stubborn and they stand by their words where they just refuse to change. But the people that I like to be around are the people that are willing to change when better evidence presents itself. I think that's the person that's always progressing and their life is always moving forward. But not only that, our ideas are always moving forward. We all have the ability to change. I think Rocky said it best, didn't he? I can change, you can change, we all can change. I'm going to get John on Skype now. But John has directed a documentary called Endless Sunshine on a Rainy Day. Let me say that again. Endless Sunshine on a Rainy Day. It's a documentary about Jade McCann and her father going through a battle with cancer. It's pretty emotional, but it's definitely something that everybody needs to see, because as we are all in the situation of people being sick and our attention is on viruses and sicknesses and diseases and stuff like that, I think cancer is something that has touched everybody's family, and it's a horrific road. I think this documentary really, really captures that. Today is the last day that you can get to see it now, so we're gonna have a link up in the story to swipe up and go straight to the thing. You can go straight to the documentary, the link to it. I think John done a great job on this, and I was lucky enough one day I went indoor skydiving. I can't remember who sorted it out for me, but I ended up going away with a group up to the north. And we were in Belfast and we went to an indoor skydiving. Jade McCann was there at the time. It was the only time I got to meet Jade. But I have to say, she definitely struck a chord with me straight away. She came straight over to me. She said, "Hey, my name's Jade McCann." I brought my son Tiernan there at the time as well. She shook my hand, shook Tiernan's hand, and I just got this mad, this incredible energy off her. I won't say she wasn't like everybody else in the room, but she just wasn't. And I think if people have met Jade, they probably know what I'm talking about. People have got to spend a lot more time with Jade. I'm pretty sure that they know what I'm talking about. But the first time I met her, I definitely experienced it. But we're going to get John Connors on now, and John's going to tell us about that. And I'm pretty sure we'll go down some avenues. And anyway, so let's have a go. How are you getting on, John, my man? Have you got me?
I'm good. How are you?
Oh, stop, man. Now, like me there, I was going to peep under the hat there. You didn't know the haircut yourself. We mean bits here now. How are you getting on?
Good, man. I'm not finding this too hard at all, to be honest with you. I'm finding it as a time to just catch up on so much shit, man. I needed to catch up. I'm like, I was avoiding writing a script for so long because you can procrastinate about things, man, especially writing. It's such a painstaking process. And then when this came up, I was like, I have no excuses now. So I wrote that script. Then I co-wrote another script with somebody else. And I've been training every day. I've lost 10 kilos since this started. And I'm back eating healthy now again, trying to drop weight for a film I'm doing in September. So I'm preparing for that, man. And I'm catching up on all the old box sets that people have been suggesting to me and films and stuff that have been saying, yeah, I'll get around to watching that. But now I've been catching around all that. So I'm grand, man, to be honest with you. I'm not really one of these people complaining about the whole thing, you know? It's getting me back into my structure and routine, the stuff that I want to do and what's important, you know?
We're in the same. Look, imagine how excited you would have been for this at Christmas if people had a saying. Now, excited is probably the wrong word as well. You know how the blade made you. Paddy's excited about the coronavirus. someone told you a few months is coming up and we're going to lock down the whole country. Nobody's going to work. Nobody's doing that. We're all just going to have to be indoors with our families with packs of food and ready to go. You know what I mean? It's obviously for the privileged people that actually are in that situation. Imagine how exciting that would have been. Get ready for this.
I know, man. And the thing is, we're seeing what's important now. I mean, what's with your family? Like, I'm really enjoying it. You know, when you're traveling so much and doing a lot of stuff, and yeah, I do be feeling guilty sometimes if I don't see my family enough. And now, you know, you see that everything else is kind of just shite. Doesn't mean nothing. Money, all this. It doesn't mean nothing. Means nothing, and it can be taken away from you in a blink of an eye. Now, the first week or two, I had a bit of anxiety about the whole thing because I think I had it myself. I locked myself up away for 15 days. I wasn't tested. In the end, they didn't test me because it was at the getting so high then, and I was getting so serious at this point, and they needed to test them out a bit, and I'm young and not like one of the dangers. But I mean, for 5 or 6 nights, I was like literally thinking I was going to die. I couldn't breathe. But when I came out of that, then I was just like, now I'm just not even worried about it at all anymore. Do you know what I mean? I stopped getting anxiety about the whole thing. It's like, it is what it is. Just trying to be safe, and I'm looking after the family, man. And that's it. You know what I mean?
Fear is a crazy part of it, isn't it? In January, you're right now, one of you like, oh, I had this in January, but I'm pretty sure I was sick in January, John. I mean, like I was never sick before. 3 weeks, I grew up in Bladen in a field across the road from my house, you know what I mean? I'm mutant, I'm like an X-Man, you know what I mean? I don't get sick, you know what I mean? Proper council genes I have, you know what I mean? Immune to everything. But I got sick in January, the three was me, the little lad, and Chelsea. And I'm not messing. I was in a bad way. If we had been in that situation right now, with all of the media and all going on, we'd be convinced the three of us were going to die. Like, I think that would have made it worse, like.
Yeah, man, absolutely, man. And the media is scaring the shit out of people. I mean, it's nothing else. Nothing else is going now only COVID, man. That's all the news. Like, they're recycling everything else as well. So what answer they're going to fucking report on? But whatever I have, man, I'm convinced I'm going to get, when it all dies down, I'm going to get the antibody test just to see if I did have it in the end. But I remember it was like one of the nights, it was the fifth night, and this is how I kind of know it was as well, is that it comes in the nighttime to people worse than anything. And that's, I was getting the nighttime really bad, you know, lethargic all day long, sleeping, not feeling good, feeling really low on energy. But then nighttime, worst fever ever, and coughing bad, and couldn't breathe. Me shot. And one night, man, I was so bad. I said, I literally said to myself, I'm gonna die here. Like, I'm gonna die. And I literally was like, Daddy, if I'm going, take me up to heaven. Literally, I said, if there's a heaven, I'm gonna find out now. I start talking to people dead belonging to me. And then the next morning, I woke up and it wasn't as bad. The next night wasn't as bad, and it just came down. And after about 10 nights, then I was grand. And I still locked myself up for another 5 days to be safe, you know what I mean? But it was scary, man. To be honest, it's very, very scary. And you can see it's the worst is with the older people, man. That's why I locked myself up, because I'd be more worried about giving it to somebody rather than fucking me, you know what I mean? Like, more worried about giving it to somebody, like my grandmother living in a camp with me, and my mother, and, you know, people who are under underlying conditions. I mean, they're the people that's going to be hard to fight it off, man. And we don't even know, man. We haven't even a clue how many actually people have this now. They reckon it could be way more people than we know. We can't even test the amount of people. And now there's people dying in old homes. Like I think in Dundalk, one old folks home, 11 people died, man. I mean, that's a national scandal. That should not be allowed to happen, man. All those homes should have been assessed immediately, and there should have been provisions put in place for them. So it's funny, man, that a lot of people are giving Vradgar praise and everybody praise. But our biggest asset has been that we're a small population and we're spread about. This is what and this is why Dublin has the biggest, because we're most together there. This is why we don't have the death tolls of other countries. But I mean, America's death toll is lower than Ireland's per capita. That's what people don't realize. It's actually lower per capita. And there is eight other developed countries with a similar size population and landmass as Ireland, right? So that's nine altogether. And Ireland's actually the worst affected of those nine similar countries. So we didn't handle this great at all. And I remember going back weeks back there when they cancelled the rugby game with Italy. But what was the use when they still allowed loads of playing fulls of Italians land down into the country? What? And then up in the Clayton Hotel up beside me, 18 of them were taken out. And because we're all sick over that weekend, and Monday or Tuesday was, and they're all taken out over that, and that place was evacuated that day over that. Like, I mean, that stuff was crazy. And then allowing 20,000 people back in Cheltenham without screening them, like, I mean, these are
the cluster outside Cheltenham as well. That one of the biggest affected towns was outside Cheltenham, like, and they still let it go.
Man, it's crazy, and you get people. I mean, you criticize them, then I've been criticizing the response all the time because I knew it wasn't good enough. And you have people trolling and people going to hear, like people start, like Vradgar basically quoted Winston Churchill, a person who hated Ireland and Irish people. And then you criticize him and people are coming after you online. Like, it's great. I think it's crazy, to be honest with you. And I think this will all be assessed. If you look at it, there's a good fella there, your man, the comedian, Oliver Callan. Very funny fella, but very smart fella. Politically knows what he's talking about. And he's been looking into a lot of stuff, especially with the old folks' homes. And he says this is a national scandal and there should be like a tribunal for this. And there will be, hopefully there'll be some sort of justice, because they did not act quick enough. And the thing for me, money, it's like a lot of it's down to money or economy versus this. But for me, human life goes above all that stuff, you know what I mean?
Awesome, man. If you can put, if you think about money and human life in the same kind of sentences, you just don't come from that place where you should come from as a humanity, you know what I mean? I agree with you in the idea of a lot of the stuff has not been told the way it is. It's a lot of it is being danced around. A lot of it is being dressed up. I think Mary Lou said it really well the other night on the Late Late Show. I was actually rubbing my eyes that Mary Lou was on RTA. What's going on? How did she do that? But she said about if you say anything, you're not nearly allowed to question stuff. You get blamed on not wearing the green jersey, in a way. And I think during a time like this, it's important for an opposition to be questioning and seeing what's going on. It's not that anybody's against it. I think people are just, we need to be very secure of what's going on. And not only that, people are like, well, then give us a solution. I'm like, well, like, New Zealand have done it. Let's just take their book off Jacinta. And why don't we outplay this? Now, we've done all the social distancing and we've done this stuff now. So we're starting to get the numbers on is it increasing? Is it not increasing? So we're, I think we're all kind of playing by ear because, Who has ever done social distancing? I've never even heard of it, you know what I mean? So, like...
No, and man, but what you're saying is totally right. The opposition to this is so important. Opposition to everything is important, but it's to keep them on their toes. I mean, if we just relax back and say, yeah, Ireland together, I mean, that shit doesn't wash with me, to be honest with you. I mean, this Vradgar and them, this is no surprise that they handle it so badly anyway. For me, these people are psychopaths and they have blood in their hands anyway. I mean, look at Vradgar's whole reign as Taoiseach. He attacked the poor and the vulnerable, the people with disabilities, people from minority backgrounds. That was his thing, his whole thing. I mean, he's resided over the worst homeless crisis the country has ever seen since the famine, which was a genocide. I mean, like, what do people expect? What do they expect? But what some people get fooled by this little fancy speech that some speechwriter wrote and ripped off Winston Churchill. And now we're all meant to say, way, isn't he a great Taoiseach? And let's forget about all them years of absolute tyranny and austerity and attacking the working class people of this country. No. There's no forgetting that for me. So that's what I've been a bit pissed off, and people have been lauding him like he's some sort of a hero. I think there's, is it Forbes magazine or something talking about him, one of the greatest leaders like in the world? And well, he answers a few phone calls as a doctor once a week, and he's a hero now. What, are you serious? Like, come on. He had his chance while he was a Taoiseach and the leader of this country to make change and to help people. And this is not going to save it all.
Saying that about the idea of coming out as a doctor again, obviously that was going to get massive headlines and stuff like that. I would have given props on the idea of coming out that if he was going on to the front line with it. When a fighter pops out, to me it would be the equivalent of if you've been fighting your whole life. Say if you're a nurse or a doctor and you've been in there and you've been fighting for rights, and you've been doing like shifts over and all back to back. Some of the doctors, I think, were doing 90 hours a week and stuff like that. And then somebody comes in and trains for a few days and then does the main event ahead of you.
Yeah. And he's getting all the attention. And what, third of our deaths in Ireland have been healthcare workers. Do you know what I mean? And people on the front line. A third of the deaths of those people literally are heroes. And this fellow's willing to sit down and talk to people for a couple hours once a week to diagnose them over the phone. And he's a hero. It was a publicity stunt. We know this. I mean, if he wanted to be a real hero, we could have joined him at the front line. I mean, he's a big, fit, healthy man. He's about 6'4". He's lean. He goes to the gym. He's not going to die of no corona. You know, so it was, for me, another publicity stunt. Like, I think he's actually thinking about making a comeback here, because he did resign, didn't he, as Taoiseach? So, but I know he's active Taoiseach now, but is he planning to take back that resignation, or this newfound PR is helping him? Or, like, I don't know what his thing is, but the future does not look good for Irish politics, man. I'm really disappointed. I would like to see another, I know it's not great times, but I would like to see another general election. And I think Sinn Féin would have stood a lot more candidates and would have got a majority by themselves almost, or you know, with a few to spare. But now, of course, we're looking at a fucking Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael coalition, and someone else is going to back them up, and that's bad news.
Right. Absolutely bad news. The parties that you're talking to, the three ones you mentioned, for other people across the world that haven't even think they all have a terrible record in this country, you know. So the people that are actually talking about going into power are actually the ones that we all would vote against going into powers. I think we should vote against rather than for, because I think that's where the confusion happens. Do you get what I mean? So when you get to put your card out, I don't know. Now, obviously, we've got one of the best voting systems in the world. It's just being hot-wired, I think, over 100 years in a way where you roll the dice and a few will come back, a few will die off, but you will get that surplus. So I've just been saying this before I came on here, John. I definitely don't know at all, but tell me now, if you throw me in the mix of it, I'm a learner, you know what I mean? I'm very coachable and I'll figure it out. And I'm all right with making mistakes on the way, you know? I know the officials are making the decisions, but when Tony Houlihan said about the plane coming in, it's a good second name, I'll give him that, right? When he said about the plane coming in with the guys for Keelings, he said he didn't know about that. So sometimes it makes me realise, are they the ones making the decisions, you know? Like, I'm pretty sure he would have had to be consulted about that happening, you know. And Leo had met with Keelan's, had done an interview down there the 2 weeks before, the 3 weeks before, I think. So I'm pretty sure that they had to have that discussion, you know. Now, and as I said, I've only said this before I came on again, I wasn't against the guys coming in, but I wanted to ask questions. What about if somebody on that flight, a Ryanair staff, had COVID-19 and they gave it to one of the people coming into the country, and then they went into isolation, would that one person not affect 180 people then? And then you have another cluster of 180 people that have came into the country with COVID-19. That was my question about it.
Well, I asked them as well, and you know, the usual old shitey throw at you. I was against them coming in, and I'll be straight up about that. And I think people should boycott Keelan's because of it. Because we should have all been abiding by our rules and regulations here, bringing in planes full of people and not being screened. And those people didn't need minister social distancing, not, and the crew were put at risk. I mean, and it's not got them being foreign, but the other aspect of them being foreign is they're bringing these poor people in their country, taking advantage of them at the lowest wage. I'm totally against any of that stuff. Absolutely. Of taking advantage of people because of their poor position. Yes. That's wrong in every way. And then the COVID thing is the main thing. We should not have done that. That was just wrong. That should have never been allowed to happen. I mean, Conor McGregor, he's voiced some of this stuff. And I have to say, obviously, Conor has his haters out there and his lovers. I wouldn't be one of his haters anyway, put it that way. And I tell you, I don't think there's... this is a fact. I don't think anybody can dispute this, even if they hate him or not. There's no one private citizen in Ireland that has done as much in this crisis as Conor McGregor. If you look at the money he's buying and he's shipping it everywhere, if you look at how he's used his voice, how he's put pressure on the government, no other Irish citizen, private citizen, has done as much against this crisis. He's done more than the government. He's leading it. He's talking to top people around the world. He knows what this man will do a better job than Leo Varadkar, because he's doing a better job during this crisis. And that's a fact. And I know he's a lot of haters out there, but you'd want to bow down and give the man some credit and be gracious and be grateful that we have a leader like that who actually loves the Irish people and loves his country and would do anything for them, because Conor McGregor is doing that and he deserves credit.
I totally agree. Look, I've been in touch with Conor over this as well, and kind of what he's doing for this. And that's Conor, you know what I mean? Conor is that heart. But it's like, as I said, look, I've said this before, I even got to the phone to you here, is about if you stand up, prepare to be shot at, you get what I mean? And that's the way it is. And
I mean, one thing we're used to in this country is a scandal, a political scandal. And we kind of just forget about it. Like overnight, we forget about scandals all the time. You know, it takes a lot to really damage a politician in this country where there's no coming back, you know.
I think there's something in the common there as well, how they that they don't. It depends if it was me, if it was Mary Lou or someone else. It doesn't take a lot to damage a politician. It takes the right media, I think, or the right friends to damage a politician, you know. These accounts that you're talking about online, I totally agree with you. And if you call them bots, you're crazy, you know what I mean? You've got a tinfoil hat on, John, you know. But here's a little mad story, right? I messaged 3 or 4 of them during something that was coming at me, you know what I mean? So obviously, we'll do it again. We'll explain it. But imagine me and you, or someone messaged you, or like a private message, and you were at the saying something bad about them. You're like, how could you not open that message? I went back into some of them messages 2 months later. They weren't opened. They weren't even looked at, the messages, you know what I mean? I know, it's like, curiosity kills the cat, you get what I mean? Unless you're that account. Now, I was on the Tommy Tiernan show. Until that day, I probably had about 5 or 6 negative messages in my whole career, John. I mean, people don't go bad at me, right? Now, when I done the Tommy Tiernan show, it wasn't edited the way I would have liked it, you know? There was some stuff I said in that, and I'll grant it now in a second, but I was, the minute I did it, who is this guy? I was getting slaughtered by all these people, and I wasn't used to that kind of that lashback, you know what I mean? But it was like people were ready on Twitter to just go at me, you know what I mean? And another thing, one of my my Wikipedias got changed, and it turned out the IP address was in New Zealand. You know? So when you get this stuff checked out, you know, but you know what, it makes me feel better about it, because then you kind of know that you're like, I don't mind fighting ghosts in a way. Like, I was a bit offended because I couldn't see them coming at me. But then I'm like, hold on, but they can't affect you, they're ghosts. You know what I mean? They give you a fright at first, and then it's like, oh, hold on, you know what I mean? These people are ghosts. People like me and you would stand our ground and say I wouldn't stand by. And not only that, the people around us get more confused when these people try to make us out to be animals, because all of a sudden it's like, what? It nearly gives the media, it gives it up, you know what I mean? It's kind of like, you were saying, that man's a scumbag. That doesn't make sense to me, because they know you. So I think sometimes it backfires on them, you know?
Yeah, man, it does, absolutely. Talk about stick online, man. Since I got online, I'm getting stick like probably like nobody else in Ireland. I have to answer for every traveller mishappen or anything that ever happens, I have to answer for it. And I'm vocal anyway, so they're coming after me for years for various different things. Now the point where I'm just like, fuck it anyway. But I seen what happened to you that time, and you were essentially the sacrificial lamb of that election. That's what that was all. It was a political stunt to assassinate you and hurt Sinn Féin and hurt Sinn Féin votes. That's what that was all about, taking your things out of context, putting them into the written word on a page, as opposed to seeing how the thing is conveyed emotionally in a video. There's loads of different manipulations there. that he done.
You want to see the amount of rules that were added in that, taken from one place and put to the odds? It's mental, anyway. And, like, listen.
Man, I watched it all. So, listen, I was one of the very few defending you. I think it was just me and Terry McMahon defending you, because I know you're a staunch fella. And I know you're the nicest fella I've ever met, and a community man who looks after his community. And that's what I said over and over on Twitter. I didn't give a shit what anybody said. But you see what they do, and you were a sacrificial lamb there. They were taking you out to take shots at Sinn Féin. I mean, this is a dirty, dirty business, politics.
Yeah. You know, I said in an interview before that, in this game, at least in the octagon, they come straight at you, and you know where the trouble is. I said, in this game, I said, it's forced off. You got to watch your back, because these guys are coming at you, you know. And you don't.
They're coming at you, right? Where are you going?
I watch you coming, and then you're getting hit with a shovel in the back, you know what I mean? Something like that kind of situation. It's hard, man.
These people as well online, they're coming at you. What they don't realize, man, a lot of these people on Twitter is a cesspool. Like, it's for the worst.
Stay away a minute.
I mean, it's like, you'll see some of these cunts in their bio, man, and they'll have hashtag mental health, better mind, all this kind of stuff. And yet they're coming after people and throwing their absolute vomit on top of them to make them feel bad. I mean, I know now what I feel like, because you got absolutely assassinated online. And I was looking, and that's why I was fighting back to help you, because I know what it feels like, man. Because when you get that volume of hate all at once, it's a lot to take.
A lot to take mentally.
Yes. And for your self-esteem, and no matter, I don't care how strong you are, that is going to hurt you, man, no matter what. And that's why I reached out to you personally as well, to let you know, I look after your mental health, because I know what it was like, you know. And I seen that happening to you, man, and it was just wrong what happened to you. But you see people, they just throw garbage at you, man, shit at you till it sticks, and they're throwing all their hate, and to no consequence, because they're behind the keyboard. We talked about this in the past before, man, years ago. If someone talks shite about you down the corner, that's it. That was the consequence. The consequence, I'm going to knock you the fuck out. Now there's no consequence because they're behind the phone, man. You know what I mean? Like, so it's everything has changed. And they can just throw anything at you, man. Man, I now just have to start blocking my own notifications, just because I don't even want to get into it with these people anymore. You know what I mean? No one wants to start feeding them, and you say something or you reply, that's like the worst thing you can do, because then they never shut the fuck up. These people have no lives. And they look at people like yourself and myself. We're doing something with our life. You know what I mean? Like, so, it's just a cesspit, man, that Twitter. It's hard. I mean, it's a love-hate relationship, in the sense that I use it for getting my message out there, selling, you know, gig tickets and all that. But, I mean, that's all it's really good for anymore, to be honest with you.
Like, that whole Caroline Flack situation went on, was going on at the same time there. Like, and, you know, it was like, now, listen, as you said, I'm strong-minded, but I was like, hold on here, like. Like, she was saying things. There was a letter she wrote or something about her suicide at the end of it. And when I read the letter, John, I was like even my girlfriend, Chelsea, was like, oh, my God. I was saying things during all of that I liked. Like, how can people believe this? Like, what? I would just want my life back. All of these type of stuff, you know what I mean? And it's, a lot of these journalists don't realise that, you know what I mean? That not only that if they knock you off, like, in the way, the position where you are, like, we help a lot of people, like, daily, you know, with the gym, with mental health and all of this type of stuff, you know. But when you're distracted, you can't kind of do that. So it's not just your life that's kind of getting really badly affected by that. It's your communities and other people around you, because you're now a bit distracted, you know what I mean? But I think I'm way into it now a little bit better, and I'm going to be smarter going forward for sure, you know what I mean? I've learned that. And lads like yourself get reaching out and stuff like that. And, you know, I appreciate that, because to me, here's a good story for you, right? A beautiful story. I put a tear in my eye, right? There was a mural around the corner from my house, right? All of that stuff dropped. I think it was late at night one night. The mural has been there for about a year and a half, a year. Never touched. The kids don't touch it. The kids, like, tell other kids not to touch it, right? And I was dropping my kid to school the next morning at 8 o'clock in the morning, and somebody had wrote on my mural, right? On my face, whatever he wrote on it, right? That was 8 o'clock in the morning. Someone else had got up and painted over what they wrote on that. Right? So we know it wasn't kids, it was adults. But someone loved me enough to get up out of their bed at 6 o'clock in the morning, 7 o'clock in the morning, right? And to paint that, right? And when we were driving by that, my young was like, Dad, what is this? Why would someone say that? They don't see this. They don't see that part. You know what I mean? But to me, that put a tear in my eye. But you know what it did? It put love in my heart, John. I swear, you still don't know who that person was that got out of their bed and painted all that, but I know that they seen that, and they were they were heartbroken, you know what I mean? And the murals facing my old grandfather's house and stuff like that and all. So it's like, it was a special thing, you know what I mean? So to hit me there was
That person who did that, man, that person who did that decided to not judge you on a few words and misquotes and this and that and the other, but to judge you from a lifespan of what you've done and what you've done for community, and not by even your words, by your actions and what's real and what we can actually see and the result of things and how you've lifted your community. That's why that person did that, man. But these people just tried to destroy you with some words, but they're never going to do that. I mean, you know, everybody loves a comeback king, and you're coming back for that anyway, man. So you've an unstoppable mindset. So, you know, it's what McGregor said to me. McGregor said to me before when I won the FA, he DM'd me on Twitter and he said, John, he says, keep doing what you're doing. They can't stop what keeps coming, you know? And I just found that so inspirational, man. And I swear to God, I've thought of that in times. They can't stop what keeps coming. It's gotten to me a few times. I go, yeah, I just keep coming. And I've done it, man. And I said it to another friend of mine. And he just said, I love that. And he said, where'd you hear that? I said, Conor McGregor. And he won an acting award and he put it up in his little speech. You can't stop what keeps coming. But show positivity just reverberates and just goes everywhere, man. And you can't stop it, keep coming, man. That's my philosophy now, to be honest with you. And that's down to now McGregor saying that, to be fair play to him.
I would have to say, in anything goes, anything ever kicks off, Conor's the first, like, one of the first people to get in touch with me, John, you know what I mean? And the idea of like, let's fix this, you know what I mean? I have to say, he's a heart of gold. And you're seeing all of this going on as well, like, personally dropping this PPE stuff, you know what I mean? Having people, like, them people in his photo, them photos that he was in posting up, like, there's mates that you know what I mean? They're mates that you grew up with that flies around the world with. It's not just some delivery company dropping away this stuff, you know what I mean? At homes and stuff like that. And you can see the nurses appreciate and the doctors appreciate that, like, you know what I mean? Someone's in there swinging with them, you know?
Yeah, and listen, man, another thing is people, you know, are going, well, why is he publicising it? Well, here's a few reasons anyway. For starters, it's a great thing for your morale to see Conor McGregor showing up, like an Irish hero superstar showing up and putting his time into it. Second of all, he's putting his face out there and going on the front line to inspire other people to do the same. And all those other millionaires in Ireland and all, they're not doing that. And he's showing them all, and he comes from a poor background, and he's doing that, going to the front line and giving them physically in their own hand and spending all his cash. You're damn right he's going to publicise that, put pressure on everybody. And if he didn't do it, it wouldn't be half as effective. You know what I mean?
And but you see people out there now, we find in Ireland and online, in this world that we live in now, you know what I mean? That people, like, I took a break for a few days the other day. It was like something was connected to my head, John, and it was like sucking me bleeding life out, you know what I mean? But it was my phone. So I threw my phone in a drawer for 3 or 4 days, and after it came out, white, you know what I mean? We have this situation where people like that are kind of famous, if you must, or they have a following or whatever, but they're afraid of them. They're afraid of their life. They're afraid to commit with anything and say anything against anybody or have. They just follow the narrative of some of them. Now, not all of them. I'm not picking these all, but you need to get up and say something, you know what I mean? There's only a small amount of us in this country, and you know what? We've massively hit a bang with the world. The Irish are there. So, like, but some people just are afraid to stand up, you know what I mean? Instead of they lose followers and stuff like that.
Yeah, a lot of people have no backbone, man. I mean, loads of stuff me going through as well. People call your friends and they wouldn't back you up. I mean, so many people are afraid to dip their foot in the water, man. A lot of people just don't have honor, is what I call it.
Yes.
Honor and the balls to stand up for your people and where you come from and your country. And sometimes that means offending people.
Yeah, there was nothing like that back in the day. Were they just expecting a few slaps? You knew you had to say something. You were going to get a few slaps for the people. Like, okay. Head down, take your slaps. I mentioned something about followers, so Lewis and followers and all this kind of thing there. Obviously, you've just directed Endless Sunshine on a cloudy day. And cloudy day, rainy day?
Yeah, cloudy day, yeah.
Yeah, sorry. I had that stuck in my head, rainy day, and I couldn't, and like, even when I'm saying it the whole, if you've seen that thing on rainy days, like, there's no thing. Sorry. But so maybe you just directed that and you dropped out with Jay McCann. But something that really struck me about that was, right, on a globe, like, say if we were testing for viruses now, we were testing where nobody really knows the numbers, but we're doing it over the scale. To see what was happening with whole followers, like, that disgusted me.
Yeah. Yeah, it was as well, man. Just for context for people. So we made this documentary, "And the Sunshine and a Cloudy Day," is following the story of Jade and Anthony McCann. And Jade was a friend of mine, and her father gets diagnosed with cancer, so she lets us know about it. And she's an online influencer at the time with a few thousand followers. And then she gets diagnosed 2 weeks later. And with the bad news of the diagnosis, her followers go up and up and up. And as she went along her cancer journey, anytime she talked cancer, more followers. Anytime she stopped talking about it or tried to act normal, less followers. These people were essentially waiting for the car crash. So this became a narrative within the documentary showing the toxicity of the online world, which is unbelievable. It was blowing our minds. We couldn't believe it. Like, and what things they were saying to our girl who was battling cancer. Why are you not dead yet? I thought you'd be dead by now. And where's me money going for the donations and all this mad stuff? So that become this strain of the documentary, the kind of societal narrative and point of it in a way. But then also within the documentary, there's a beautiful relationship between her and her father and the rest of the family. And you see these people who are really the epitome of the fighting Irish, I suppose, not willing to give up ever and showing that human spirit and how strong it is, you know. And Jade was such a beautiful person inside and out, so talented in many, many ways. She could have been another Sinead O'Connor. She was that good of a singer, you know. But the documentary went down the treat at the Dublin International Film Festival. We won the Best Audience Award. I think we're probably the first documentary ever that was on no budget. We met it for nothing. And they won the audience award. The last three years, the audience award in Dublin International, the films that had won the audience award have gone on to be nominated or win the Oscar, which is mad. And we're there doing it with no money. So we released it online on Vimeo now on the Cluster Fox Films website for people to watch it, because we're like, we were going to go and try and get a little cinema release and do this, that, and the other, but COVID kicked in and we're like, are we just going to shelve this now for 9 months? Nah. So we decided to get up, because I think a lot of people have gotten back to this, man, and they've gotten strength from it. And they've said that, you know, they feel grateful for what they have and they don't want to be complaining anymore. Seeing what they went through and how they fought tooth and nail has inspired them. So that, as filmmaker, that's what you want to be doing, is trying to make a little bit of difference or change a bit of someone's mentality, you know?
I sat down with my girlfriend and I watched it, right? So her uncle had died, I think it's 2 years now, I think, of cancer, and he would have been like a father, right? So, and a lovely man, right? From Liverpool, Gary, his name was, pure, like, builder, employed all the young fleas, looked after them, you know what I mean? Just a good guy he was, John, right? And unfortunately, he died of cancer, he did, and he fought it all the way to the end, he did. And I watched it with her, and I'm not messing. You want to see the shifts of emotion she went through. And as I said, the next time I see John, like, I have to tell him about this, you know what I mean? Because I could see it. And I know as a director, you're trying to bring the emotions up to the sky. And I don't know, and make people see things differently. But, man, I tip my hat to you. Literally, she was kind of up and then down. But one of the things that got her was, and what got me was, like, the followers team was devastating, you know what I mean? But the story about cancer, is it, and I said it just before we came on the camera, so I kind of broke down what the story was right before. I got to go skydiving, indoor skydiving with Jade McCann, would you believe it, right? Only time I ever met her. And she came straight into me and I just got this energy off her straight away. I ended up kind of chilling with her for the day, chilling around with a few of them. And I was kind of there as like a mature person. I was trying to tell them how to use their influence, but just to be like, be very careful of the youth and stuff like that. And they're watching what you're doing. So can you just try and bring this in a way? So that's why I was there. But I have to say, straight away, she struck me just as this little ball of energy. You know what I mean? And my uncle was the same. My uncle Tiernan was there and he was the same, saying, she was a lovely girl, wasn't she, that? I told him about the situation. I said, like, that girl that we were with, like, she had died of cancer. And he couldn't believe it. No, young people don't die of cancer.
Yeah, she had it. She had it that time. Like, she had a very rare form of it as well, PCOMA. Very, very just like, basically, the rarer something is, the more likely you are to die, because there's just less studies, less patients to study. And then, and again, unpredictable. She was misdiagnosed first. We thought it was a different form of sarcoma, and then we realized it was PCOMA, which she thought, which gave her a bit of hope, and then we found out that it was kind of, you know, it was just as bad then, you know. But it just hit her then out of the blue, man. Just like the different steps of boom, then she got way worse, and then boom. And then once she got really sick, she was gone very quick then, you know. Very, very sad. But she left a legacy, man, and the documentary is her legacy, you know, and she knew that near the end. That's what it was going to be. because she was such an amazing person, man. She's a brilliant singer, songwriter. I mean, she could act. She was brilliant at presenting. She could do anything. She literally could have done anything with her life. She had so much potential. And right before diagnosis, she just got accepted. She got her visa for America. She was going off to move over to America and make it over there in New York. That was always her dream, you know. But unfortunately, she never got to achieve that dream. But her legacy is there in the documentary forever. So in some ways, kind of, she'll be immortal in that way.
Oh, we do. We agree with you in that, because, and in like, it does, there is a closure in it, in the idea of like the two of them, I don't know, being together. You know what I mean? And in, during the fight, I'm pretty sure that our Jade was kind of like thinking, like, if you had to put, I won't say like a question on it, she probably would have thought her father would have went first. You know what I mean? Yeah. Is that what happened?
Yeah, well, that's the first way she thought it, but it was such a roller coaster, man. One minute they were saying that she, oh, there's hope for her, she only has to get something out or get an operation, and then, oh, no, there's no operation, no, there's no hope. Then she gets misdiagnosed, oh, maybe now there might be hope. And then the father's like, ah, he'd be grand. And then it's like, no, he won't be grand. I mean, because it's such a tricky, cancer's such a tricky thing, man, because it's so hard to diagnose at times or get it at the right times. You don't know if it jumps, you don't know what is happening. So the unpredictable is around the corner all the time, like, and that's a part of the reason why the documentary is so compelling, is we just stuck the camera on and you're seeing all this mad information coming in and everything is changing, and we didn't know what to do. We had a certain point we're going, well, we just stopped this documentary, you know. But Jay didn't want us to stop. She wanted us to keep going. She wanted us to be a part of our legacy, you know.
Oh, well, it is. You've done a great job on it, mate, I have to say. You've done an incredible job. So it's this the last day, am I right? So Tuesday, this is the last day that we can that people can avail of it?
We might get it might get extended, but I'd say more than likely it'd be Tuesday. But sure, it'll be there somewhere anyway. So long right. As it's out there.
How do people get it?
Oh, they get it on Vimeo. Online on Vimeo or the Cluster Fox Films website. That's my website, myself and Tiernan Williams' website for our production company.
We're going to have a link up for it as well, we will, and we'll push it through the No Shame page. Before you go, hope you have a little part for me in that new script, do you?
Absolutely.
You looking for a little?
I have a few things coming up, man, you'd be well suited in there. Believe me.
I love to try it, John. I just love a try. I had a career in school. I was the same. Look, we used to just jump into drama, and you'd be like, "No, we was the messer. I was never in school unless there was a drama play on." Yeah. Do you know what I mean? And it was like, you know,
you should have been in Vikings, man.
The teachers that see it, you know what I mean. But you get these people that see it, don't you? You know what I mean? Like that charisma. But then sometimes you put a camera on. But to me, I'm the opposite. I think when you put a camera on, I'm better. I'd love to be able to act like somebody that gets no consequences. Is that what the buzz is of it?
Yeah. Well, you get to live vicariously through your character.
You know what I mean?
I played a character recently in a film. It's called Broken Law. It's a gangster film. It's going to be coming out soon. Well, was. We'll see. But he was a real, this fella just doesn't give a shit what he says or offended or semi-racist, misogynist, all this. And it was fun playing that type of character in the times that we live in now, where everybody's telling you to shush and not say this and shut your mouth, and freedom of speech is under attack. It was kind of invigorating to play a character who just says whatever the fuck he wants without consequence. You know what I mean?
I was watching, you know, I've been watching loads of Disney stuff lately. I got that Disney Plus. I mean, your uncle loves it, he does. And I'm telling you now, man, there's some films that are made by Disney that could not be made again.
Oh, not now. No. Man, so listen, 5 years ago was a different era, man. Trump came in, and since he came in, it's all changed. The PC Brigade have come in. So, like, there's films made 5 years ago you couldn't make now. It's just everything has changed, man. Step Brothers, you couldn't have made, you know what I mean? Like, you couldn't make that now. It's just, you know, it's just, that's just the way it is. We're going towards this mad time where people don't want to hear this and don't want to hear that. And meanwhile, all the ugliness will be there anyway. It'll all just be bubbling under the surface. Yeah. And whenever you repress something, it explodes. So
Everybody just went, we'll be all standing on the deck playing violins when it goes on, you know what I mean? For another tune, John. Would you fancy another tune? You're a legend, mate. We have to say, anytime we get you on this, you're full of knowledge, you're full of I feel better as well afterwards. You get what I mean? You're conversating with somebody that's kind of thinking out the same ways. I have to say, mate. And the thing is, I don't think we agree on everything, you know what I mean, together. We wouldn't even agree on it. But that's brilliant. isn't it?
Yeah, exactly, brother. We don't have to, and that's the thing. People have to get over themselves and understand people out there have different points of views and different ways of looking at life, and then you have to accept that's their view. You don't push your thing on them or your agenda. And then you learn from each other and you see their point of views and where they're coming from. And that's how you learn and grow, man. You have to be open all the time to learning new things and changing your mind as well, you know?
No, I agree with you. Before I go, remember I was telling you last time, I think I'm a better traveler than me, John. I was telling you. Maybe you were like, I don't know who you said. You were like, actually, look, like, no, we've never met me that, so I probably do. I had the fire out the back and all of that, right? And then I found, one of the bleeding canopy things, set up a canopy. I spent about 14 days out the back, sitting at me fire there, sipping bottles of beer and reading a book. Best time ever.
Lovely, lovely. I was really doing the same last night at a fire as well.
I was seeing on your Instagram, I did. What was the tape? What was on the tape before we go?
That was me grandmother telling us stories about 25 years ago in our old camp. She was telling us stories and one of the family recorded on a cassette tape. She tells stories about leprechauns and fairies and ghosts and old Gaelic Ireland under British rule 800 years ago and all this kind of stuff. So we grew up with all that. So one day someone just recorded them. We got 2 or 3 hours of that. So I'm going to convert that, digitalize it, and put it up online for people to listen, you know. So it's up there kind of like an archive, you know. She's a great old chap.
I love that. Do you know that? I love the idea. I love that old storytelling. And that has died a little bit, you know? But a story is a good story when you see the kids starting to perk up.
We'd be like that. And we'd be like waiting for them, they're hanging on our words. And that's the power of a great storyteller, Shanachie, essentially. And she's a great old Shanachie. And you'd be just like, and your imagination and you're visualizing and all, you know? And that's how I became an actor. That's why. Because I learned to build a really vibrant, vivid imagination from those campfire stories growing up and imagining it all in my head and her telling the stories verbally. So I just look at acting as telling a story, being a Shanachie, you know?
It was amazing. I love that. Just before I left the house there, someone sent me a video of the Siege of Janeville today. Have you ever heard, that? The Siege of Janeville? My grandfather would have been on the ground there, but then the year after, they would have been at the Battle of the Tunnel. I think I've told the story of it before. I got it mixed up before, but my mother has stories in her that she's never told me in her whole life. I don't know how she's kept them in, you know what I mean? And she's telling me about my grandfather getting hit in the bleeding helmet and all with a bullet. And a guy that died, one of his friends died there, Andrew Wickham's name was. His son came around years later and he ended up giving him his beret that he kept from and all, like, and sitting there out the back garden about 20 minutes before I came down, we had to do this. And it was only because I was at the sharing the video today, and I was looking at, like, the idea of the UN flag being flown, and the story of the idea of them guys not getting their medals and stuff like that for 40 plus years after. It's heartbreaking. I remember my granddad telling me that as a kid. He was heartbroken over that, you know. Now, he never got to live to see it either.
Did you see the film?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Look, the mad thing was, when the film came out, I was telling you about this. I spent nice memories to have, the tape. That...
Record the stories. I did them with my grandparents. I recorded. Get your phone down, press record, and get everything out of them, and archive that shit, man. Put that away forever. And your kids will have it, and your grandchildren will have it, man.
Fortunately, he died when I was 15, right? So he died when I was 15, but he would have been my father. He would consider my father.
Your mother record those stories.
Oh, you know what? That's a good idea, because if we put a recorder out, she's old school. She'd be like, no comment. You're a legend, John. Right, look after yourself, bro.
All the best, man.
So, that was No Shame episode. I don't even know anymore, because me old Flower Robin isn't there to tell me. People are going to start saying, you know what? Robin, you're a big part of this podcast. Everybody, look after yourselves. Keep the social distancing going. Let's stay with this for a while and let's see what goes on. The developments are coming through. And I think the more we do the social distancing and staying in our houses and making sure that we're washing our hands and keeping with what we need to do. I don't want to keep repeating this stuff. And I don't want to keep telling people to stay in the house, because I do understand, as I said before, this some of the messages I got as some people just are not built to be in the house for a few weeks. You know, I know a lot of people that... A lot of people I deal with or talk with, we've kind of built back up from a level, you know. So be aware when you're telling people to just get back into their houses that some people are carrying mental health issues or suffering with depression, and a few weeks in your house is not going to be good for that as well. So while you are telling people to get into the house, give them some tips on what to be doing in the house. What I've been doing is going through some old rap, if you're into rap. So I've been going through some Nas stuff, going through some Tupac, planting some flowers, doing some painting the fences if you can get your hands on a bit of paint. I've seen people posting them on Facebook and people leaving paint out for people to be able to get at neighbours and stuff like that, which is brilliant. So I continue to see the goodness in this whole situation. Thanks for all the messages back. The podcast is keeping people going. I think the views have gone way up now because everybody's locked in their house. So we're happy to be able to keep people in the loop and try and get as much information to people as we can and have the banter, you know, have a little bit of a crack. So look after yourself. That was no shame, as I said. Look after yourself.